All right, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231. It's March 15th. And let's see, March 15th. Ah, last time we had an exam. So everybody should know what your scores are. They should be in Blackboard. Who couldn't find your grades in Blackboard? Did I put them in Blackboard? Oh, if you don't see your grade, maybe you didn't show me an ID. Okay, I only see like one or two people raising their hand, so it's probably not a whole lab section. All right, so you got to show me a picture ID. But they're in Blackboard. So we're going to cover muscles this week, and then next week, nervous system, and then the week after that, spring break, which is a good study time because the week after on Wednesday is exam three after spring break. Okay, so it's we got to just finish up this semester. Now in lab, what's happening in lab? We still have to do lab number 7 and then on Wednesday lab 8, which means then the week after you have your third practicum in Wednesday, and then unfortunately the Monday group has to wait until after spring break to take the practicum. All right, sorry about that. And I don't think there's going to be any instructors around during spring break. So I'll show you some really good online resources. You're loaded with online resources, so all you have to do is eke out some time to look at those online resources. All right, so here is, hold on to this for just a little bit before you sign it and pass it around, okay? Like maybe a half hour or so, 15 minutes, something like that, okay? All right, so who's got a question? Anybody have a question? No questions? I don't see anybody talking, but I sure hear a lot of people talking. Huh? Oh, yeah, it's still me. Okay, and I have somebody's pen here. Thanks. I'll give it back to you after class. Okay? All right, so that's the schedule of festivities. All right, one of the easiest things to know about muscles is knowing the action of not just one muscle, but a whole group of muscles, depending on what body compartment it's in. All right, so this way you don't have to memorize every single muscle, just know the body compartment and know what the action is, and then when somebody says a muscle, you automatically know what the action of a particular muscle is because it belongs to a particular body compartment. For instance, in the anterior neck, all of these muscles right here basically are going to stabilize the neck. If they're anterior, right, what does a muscle do when it's excited? Contract. Yeah, it contracts, so it can only shorten. A muscle can't push on anything, right? So if you have muscles in the anterior part of your neck and they contract, what's the motion that's going to be produced? Okay, that's flexion because those muscles are contracting. In order to extend the neck, what muscles have to contract? Yeah, the posterior muscles have to contract like that. Right, because the anterior muscles can't push your head back up. They can't cause extension. So muscles can only pull. So you should probably write this list out a number of times so that you're really familiar with it. All right, so anterior neck is for head flexion. Posterior neck is for head extension. And the same thing for the trunk muscles. Most of the muscles in the trunk that we're going to be looking at in the anterior compartment are going to cause flexion of the vertebral column. Posterior trunk muscles are going to cause extension, right? Opposite motions because they're on opposite sides of the body. What do we call it when muscles have opposite motions or opposite actions? Antagonism, right? So these are antagonistic muscles. So you should, to help you appreciate muscles and how they work, if you learn the name of a muscle, try to think of a muscle that's going to be antagonistic to it that will prevent you from having to memorize every particular muscle, right? You'll be able to relate it to other important functions in your body, how your body is controlled. So I think that's actually easier than just strict memorizing. Okay, anterior arm. Where's your anterior arm? I'm confused. Where's your anterior arm? Ah, good. All right. I didn't want people to point right here because what's right here? That's your forearm. Okay, so your arm is between your shoulder and your elbow. Anterior muscles right here cause what kind of motion? Flexion at the elbow. So the posterior arm is going to be extension at the elbow, or you could say flexion of the forearm or extension of the forearm. So you can either say the joint or that body part. That's fine. All right. Now, forearm. Okay? You got basically an anterior compartment and a posterior compartment. And the anterior compartment is important for, yeah, the action would be flexion of your digits or of the wrist, right? So your hand or your fingers, flexion. And where would you look to find extensors of the wrist and the digits? Yeah, it would be the posterior forearm. So these are all extensors. Okay? Same thing for the thigh and the leg. Now your elbow and your knee are kind of rearranged. They don't bend the exact same way, right? So some of the muscles are arranged a little bit differently. So as in the arm, let's see, where's arm? Anterior arm, that's for flexion. What about the anterior thigh? And why is that? Because your elbow is backwards compared to your knee, right? All right, so that explains that pretty easily. So the anterior thigh is for extension. What kind of motion is extension? What do when you extend? Yeah, you're increasing the angle when you're extending. And what kind of motion, everyday motion, do you use to extend your leg? But like when you're trying to do what? Like kick a ball, right? That's extension, right? I was going to say like kick somebody, but that would be a good example too, okay? All right, and flexion, flexion, the thigh muscles, all right, those are all in the posterior compartment. Anybody have any idea what kind of muscles are back there? There's a group called the hamstrings, yep. So I do want you to know the names of the hamstrings, and you're going to look at these in lab starting Wednesday. Okay. All right. Now, at the ankle, as opposed to the wrist, and the wrist, of course, you got flexion and extension and hyperextension. Because your lower appendage is twisted around a little bit, remember, you don't have flexion and extension of the wrist. What do you have? What kind of motions do you have at your ankle? It's a little stranger. You can point your toes into the ground, or you can lift your toes up off the ground. What are those two motions called? Into the ground is plantar flexion, up off the ground is dorsiflexion, right? All right, so since you have those two antagonistic motions, where would you look for muscles that produce those motions? They're going to be on opposite sides of the body. So for instance, for dorsiflexion, you would want to look in the anterior compartment, and for plantar flexion, you want to look in the posterior leg, right? So remember, thigh versus leg. And of those two groups, which group do you think is stronger? What takes more effort? What takes more energy to lift your toes off the ground or to point your toes into the ground? Like what I'm doing right now, if I'm pointing my toes into the ground, what am I doing? I'm elevating my whole body. Okay, and if I lift my toes off the ground, what am I elevating? Yeah, your foot or your toes. So what's heavier? Your whole body is a lot heavier. So where would you expect to see big, massive muscles? Anterior compartment or posterior compartment? Yeah, big, massive muscles in the posterior compartment for plantar flexion because it's going to be supporting your whole weight. So that's going to make perfect sense. All right, so I do want you to just think in those ways, and you have some nice cross-sectional figures in your textbook, and we don't do a lot of cross-sectional anatomy in this class. We do, organ system anatomy, pretty much. But here, this is a really good example. I think it will illustrate the concepts of opposite body compartments contain muscles that have antagonistic motions. So here we have, what kind of section is this right here? Transverse section, or you could say a cross section through the arm. And in the posterior compartment, we have the triceps, and in the anterior compartment, we've got the biceps. Right? And so what's the action of the biceps? That is for flexion, and in the opposite body compartment, you have the triceps for extension. Right? So this is just a really good model for you to appreciate body compartments, and even if you look in the forearm, you can see it can be nicely grouped into flexors and extensors and opposite body compartments. And maybe we took a look at this last time. Okay, if we look at a cross section through the thigh, did I have thigh someplace? Here's a good thigh. All right, we've got three main compartments, right? So we have flexors that are posterior, we've got extensors that are anterior, but we also have another group here that's medial. Right, so don't forget, muscles can only do what? They can only shorten. The medial muscles in your thigh are going to cause adduction. Right? There's going to be some over here that are going to cause abduction. Right? But which muscle group do you think is stronger? The adductors or the abductors over here? The adductors, because you need a lot of strength to keep your legs underneath your body. Because if those muscles are weak, your legs are going to spread apart and you're going to fall right down between them. Okay? So the adductors are very big and strong. All right, well, let's now start to look at some muscles in particular. All right, so I've got a list of some muscles by different body compartments, kind of arranged like how your lab manual is arranged. All right, so some of the muscles that we've been talking about, actually pretty much I think all of the muscles that we've been talking about so far, have an origin and insertion. So let's just go over the definition of origin and insertion again. What is the origin of a muscle? Okay, that's where it's located. That's an end of the muscle. So it's going to attach to something. All right, and you should have a functional understanding of what the origin is as opposed to the insertion by the function of those two ends of the muscle. Okay, so remember, a muscle produces motion. So that's what we want to think about. What's the motion that's being produced by the origin, or the motion that's being produced at the insertion? So the origin is what part of a muscle? A lot of motion or a little bit? Just a little bit of motion. That's the origin. So that means that the insertion is producing the most motion, or that's where movement is taking place, right? And if this muscle is connected to a bone, how does a muscle connect to a bone? Oh, you know what? That's not quite true. Can't be a ligament. Ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. So a muscle-to-bone connection is a ligament, right? And what's that part on a bone that a muscle attaches to via that tendon? What's that called? That starts with a P. It's called a process, right? So remember, a process on a bone is a rough raised area. You forgot about all your bones already. Is a rough raised area, right? And it's big and strong and it's rough because what's happening to that part of the bone? It's being exercised. It's being pulled on all the time. And as you exercise a bone, it just gets what? Bigger and stronger at that location, right? So that's what a process on a bone is. All right, so you got the two ends of a muscle, and they connect to different bones, and when that muscle shortens, what happens to those two points on a bone? They get pulled closer together, right? So usually a muscle pulls two bones closer together across a joint, you know, and we saw some joints produce rotation, some joints produce angulation, some pronation, supination, but basically two bones at those two points are going to come closer together. They're going to approximate each other. All right, so most of the muscles in our body do that. But first, since we're going to talk about the head, there are some muscles that don't have both an origin and insertion attached to a bone. Some muscles have one end attached to a bone and the other end attached to some soft tissue in your body, like maybe the skin. All right, and so when that muscle contracts, that part of your skin actually moves. And we call these muscles of facial expression. So muscles of facial expression are a little bit of a departure from muscles that we've talked about so far, because the origin is going to be attached to a bone in your skull, and the insertion is going to be attached to some skin, which is going to move some skin around on your face. Right? Okay, so a really good example of this is the occipital frontalis, all right? And we learned also previously that you can use nomenclature to understand the origin and insertion and thus the action of muscles by just looking at the name of a muscle. Occipital frontalis is a perfect example. All right, so when we use nomenclature to name a muscle by origin and insertion, what comes first at the beginning of the word, the origin or the insertion? It's the origin. All right, so the origin of the occipital frontalis is the occipital bone. All right, and then that muscle goes all the way over the top of your head. There's a big, broad, flat tendon on top of your head. And then it attaches to another muscle in your forehead called the frontalis. Guess why they call that the frontalis? Because you got that frontal bone right there, right? And it inserts into the skin right above the eyebrows. So when the occipital frontalis contracts, what moves? Does the occipital bone move? Or your eyebrows? Your eyebrows move. Exactly right. I saw a really good example of this on the TV. How important facial expression is. Oh, I forgot. Maybe it will come to me. It was last night. It was some silly show. But what about facial expression? Is that important for communicating? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Remember, there's this old saying that says it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So it's not only just the inflection that you use, but the face that you present to somebody connotates and actually imparts a lot of meaning. Okay? And in lab, I give an example of that. I don't think I'll take time to do that now. But of course, you should know that the expression on your face is very important for communicating with other people and other animals and all kinds of circumstances. All right, so what does this occipital frontalis look like? You have a really good picture of occipital frontalis right here. Nice superficial muscle. We don't have to move away any other muscles because it's right there. So here is the occipital belly. Here is the frontal belly. They're connected via the galea aponeurotica. That's an aponeurosia. Aponeurosia is a broad, flat, tendinous sheath that is connecting a muscle to a bone. All right, and so its action is to elevate or raise the eyebrows. And you notice in anatomy what? If you know one name, you might actually have to become familiar with another name, right? Because, and of course in lab, we give you credit for all this kind of stuff. So another name for the occipital frontalis is the epicranius. But again, you could sort of use an understanding of nomenclature to know what muscles we're talking about. Epi, what does epi mean? It means on top of or above. And cranius means cranium, so it's the muscle on top of the cranium. Right, so that's another similar way of naming this particular muscle. But I like occipital frontalis because we can use that to talk about nomenclature. All right, well, what are some other muscles of facial expression that you're going to become familiar with? All right, there are some muscles right here, the zygomaticus. All right, the minor and the major, and they go from the zygomatic bone to connective tissue at the angle of the mouth. So the zygomaticus is, what kind of facial expression, when those contract, are they going to produce? So those would be the smiling muscles, right? Okay, and then the depressor anguliaris right here, this would be like a frowning muscle. Okay, same thing with the depressor labii inferioris. So I know this sounds a lot like Harry Potter, but these names actually are pretty easy to appreciate, right? Because depressor, right, what's going to be depressed when that contracts? The lower lip. Yeah, it's going to be depressed, right? And the name for lip is labium or labii, right? And inferioris means what? It's the lower one, right? Superioris is going to be the upper lip. Okay, so some other muscles of facial expression. Sometimes we have a skeletal muscle that's circular. Anytime we have a circular, or most times when we have a circular skeletal muscle, we call that an orbicularis. Orbicularis is circular skeletal muscle, and we have one around the eye right here, and I suppose that's facial expression, all right, but that's also used to protect your eye from getting foreign bodies into your eye, so that's probably a really important function right there. But it can be used for what? Winking at somebody. Who's really somebody famous on TV that winks a lot? I don't know if he's like Simon Cowell. He's winking at people all the time, okay? And it's, people just get into a habit, I think, of doing that. I'm not sure I always know what it means, but I think he's... Simon Cowell will say, oh, you're a really lousy singer, you know, but you should do this and this and this, and you might be good, all right? So first part, he'll say, you're lousy, and then tell you something and wink at you, and what does the winking mean? It means that, well, you have a chance, you know, keep up the good work, okay? All right, so here's another circular skeletal muscle right here. We're pretty much done talking about muscles of facial expression, but you have a number of them that you have to know in lab. All right, the other muscles in your face are used for mastication, for chewing. Okay, that's for what? Elevating the mandible, grinding the mandible back and forth, and some other muscles that control food in our mouth so that when we elevate the mandible, right, it's well behaved. All right, so for instance, the orbicularis oris right here is important because when you chew on food, if you didn't have that muscle, what would happen to the food? It would just come spitting out of your mouth, okay? And of course, when you're just a little kid, you need this muscle to nurse and to suckle. And if you can't nurse or suckle, you're not going to thrive, you're going to die. So that's a pretty important muscle, right? Even today as an adult, if you were to chew and the food comes spitting out of your mouth, you wouldn't thrive either. You'd starve to death, right? So that's a pretty important muscle. A muscle that's kind of similar to the orbicularis oris is this one right here called the buccinator. The buccinator is in your cheek, all right? So that when you chew down on food or elevate the mandible to chew on food, that food has to stay underneath your teeth to grind it, all right? And so the buccinators hold the food underneath your teeth so that when you chew on it, it doesn't come spitting out to the side. All right, so that's another important muscle for thriving. A couple other muscles for mastication would be the temporalis and the masseter. Right here, these are important muscles for elevating the mandible. All right, so the let's look at the masseter here first. So it's on the origin. Well, I tell you what, here is a point of attachment. I told you what it is, but I don't want to tell you. Here's a point of attachment, zygomatic bone and the zygomatic process of the temporal bone, and it goes down to the angle of the mandible. So those are the two attachment points. All right, and when the masseter contracts, all right, what's the action that's produced? Depression is opening your mouth. But remember, muscles can't push, they can only pull together. All right, so the angle of the mandible is going to be pulled up toward the zygomatic bone. What do we call that? That's elevation of the mandible. All right, so what is the origin of the masseter? What bone moves? Does the zygomatic bone move? No, it's the mandible that moves, right? So this is the origin, here is the insertion, the angle of the mandible. Okay, and then the temporalis, right, here is one attachment point on the temporal bone, and the insertion is on the coracoid process of the mandible. And don't forget, the temporalis can only pull bones together. What bone is going to move? The temporal bone, or is the mandible going to move? Mandible is going to move, and again, that causes elevation. So these are two very important muscles for mastication. The other two that we see right here are the pterygoids. The pterygoids insert medially onto the mandible, and the origin is on the pterygoid processes of the sphenoid bones. All right, so you can see the medial pterygoid can be used for elevation. The lateral pterygoid really doesn't, but even the medial pterygoid right here isn't so important for elevating the mandible. It's for causing the mandible to move sideways, right, for a grinding motion. All right, so again, that kind of illustrates what a cool joint the temporomandibular joint is, because not only can it cause elevation and depression of the mandible, right, but it can cause a lateral movement of the mandible, but also protraction and retraction, and you can see that this lateral pterygoid, when it contracts, is going to protract the mandible, right, because it's going to pull the mandibular condyle anteriorly. All right, so those are some muscles of mastication. So let's talk about some muscles now that work on the vertebral column. Let me just go to the next picture and see what this next picture is like. Ah, that's a good one. All right, next area, neck muscles, sternocleidomastoid. Now, is that your friend, or are you intimidated by that name? That should be a really friendly name, right? Because in the name, what's it telling you? The origin and insertion, and because of that, you know the action that it's produced. You probably should know what body compartment it is in. Okay, so what's in the first part of the word, origin or insertion? The origin, okay? And the origin is the sternum, as well as the clavicle. That's what that clido means. Sternoclido is the origin, and the insertion is what? Mastoid process. So do you remember where that is? Yeah, some people are doing a really good job. It's that bony prominence right behind your earlobe right there. All right, so here you have the sternocleidomastoids right here. And these muscles are really obvious in people, right, like singers and things like that. These muscles just kind of stick right out of their neck. You can see them when they're singing, and as a matter of fact, in most people. So here's the sternocleidomastoid. Here's one origin on the manubrium. Here's the other origin on the clavicle, and the insertion is on the mastoid process. And when this muscle contracts, right, what bone moves? Does the sternum move, or does the temporal bone move? Okay, the temporal bone is going to move, right, because that's a definition of the insertion. All right, now what is that motion called? So the mastoid process is going to be pulled down. Okay, that is flexion of the neck. But this muscle right here is not located on just one side of your body. It's located, how do we talk about that, if it's located on both sides? It's bilaterally located. Okay, so you got one on the right side of your neck, one on the left. And the action that's produced is different depending on if it's a unilateral contraction or a bilateral contraction. If it's a bilateral contraction, then of course it's just flexion of the neck. If it's a unilateral contraction, all right, if it's, you're just contracting on one side of the neck, this mastoid process is going to come down, right, to my sternum right here. And notice what else happens. It causes a rotation, okay, or a rotation. All right, so if it's bilateral, it's flexion. If it's unilateral, it provides a rotation to one side of the body or the other. Okay. And so that's really easy to understand just because of nomenclature. So here we have, in this particular case, right, two actions that you should know because I'm using this as a teaching example, right, because you might see that on the test. Now on practicums, if you're asked for the action of a muscle, you just have to say one. And I get a lot of questions from people and say, well, I know a muscle and it's got 15 different origins and insertions and 20 different actions. Do I have to know all of those for the practicum? But, you know, on the practicum, what do you got? You got one line. You couldn't put all those actions and origins right there. All right. Plus also, at the end of the muscle labs, there is a list of muscles with origins and insertions and actions. So it's an abbreviated list compared to your book. So that's where you should start. Make sure you know the abbreviated list of origins, actions, insertions. And if you want to know more about that muscle, then you can go to your textbook. And then if you want to even know more, where do you go? Yeah, like Google or something, right? Go to Wikipedia, and some of that information is pretty good. All right, so let's show you another really good reference that you have in Blackboard. And it is getbodysmart.com. Okay, so there are really a lot of nice graphics in here. There are not a nice lists that tell you origin insertion, but I think what's really handy is that a lot of these muscles, you'll be able to visualize what their action is because there's an animation associated with it. All right, so you can see for muscles of facial expression, they don't have a lot of muscle animations yet, but they do have frontalis. All right, so right now, where do you find that frontalis muscle? above, yeah, it's just going to be superficial to your frontal bone. What muscle participates with the frontalis? Occipitalis. Okay. And what does the occipital frontalis, what's the action of the occipital frontalis? Raises your eyelids. All right, so let's take a look and let's just see what we got right here. All right, so it's going to reflect away a bunch of muscles, you know, like your orbicularis, oris, and oculi right here. All right, so you can practice labeling all these muscles if you want. That's really nice. Or you can actually go get rid of all of these until you get to the, all right, frontalis muscle right here. All right, so that's the frontalis. So the origin is the galea aponeurosa or aponeurotica, and the insertion is skin around the eyebrows. All right, so, and here's the action. All right, raises eyebrows or wrinkles the forehead. So if you, these little, is that blue?
Yeah.
That blue right there, typically on a website means what? It might mean that it's a hyperlink, and indeed that's the case in this particular website. All right, so if you click on that, all right, you should see, what did you see? The eyebrows are being elevated, right? And then when you relax that muscle, gravity takes over and they go back to their normal location. Okay. Now, one thing that you don't have to know in this class is the nerve. So don't spend a lot of time memorizing nerves that innervate a particular muscle. All right? We just want you to know origin, insertion, and action. All right, so that's the only muscle of facial expression. What else do we have right here? How about muscles of mastication? What are some important muscles of mastication? Ah, I was wondering why it wasn't going. Okay, the ones that we have right here are the pterygoids and the masseter and the temporalis. So let's take a look at some of these. We've talked about these already. So what about masseter we have right here? All right. So we're going, so you can dissect away some of these superficial muscles so that you can see underlying structures. That's pretty handy. All right, so which one are we at? Masseter. All right, so the origin is the zygomatic arch and the zygomatic bone. The insertion is a lateral surface, not the medial surface, not the inside surface of the angle of the mandible, but this lateral surface. Okay, and when that muscle contracts, it does what? Elevates? Yeah. Elevates the mandible. Okay. All right. And see if I go back. All right. Temporalis. All right. The origin. So let's, let me get this. Ah, this is really nice. All right. So here is the origin of the temporalis, which is basically but the temporal bone, part of the parietal, part of the frontal bone right here. And the insertion is the tip and medial surface of the coronoid process of the mandible. All right, so you can see the origin and insertion very nice. And then if you want to see the motion, okay, don't forget. So this part of the mandible is going to be pulled closer. It's going to be elevated. It's going to be pulled closer to the origin. Oh, and I don't have a slider right here until I click elevate. And again, that is for elevating the mandible. So I hope you guys really like this tutorial right here. Muscles of mastication. Let's see what we got for lateral pterygoid. Oh, I don't know if it's activated. Or I was just being impatient. I was being impatient. Okay, so the origin, okay, are the pterygoid processes of the sphenoid. This is what we want you to know. All right, so it kind of looks like the mandible, but it's not. It's really the pterygoid processes of the sphenoid bone that are sticking down. And the insertion is the condyle of the mandible, the mandibular condyle right here. All right, so when these contract, it's going to protract the mandible, and it can also depress the mandible. So protraction. All right, so you can you see these muscles contracting right here? Well, you hear protract. All right, so it's pulling the condyle anteriorly. And depression. Okay, so it's going to depress the mandible as well. So you should look at all of these actions until you're really familiar with them. All right. Let's go on to another muscle. Let me see if I can find sternocleidomastoid. That's what I was trying to find right here. All right. Muscle system, sternocleidomastoid. Where would we find that? I don't know if they have that. Facial expression. No, they don't have it as an exercise. Nope. Okay, so let's move on to some trunk muscles. Rectus abdominis. All right, so what can you tell me by knowing the name? Rectus abdominis. Where are you going to find this muscle? What kind of action is going to be produced? What kind of muscle does it look like? Straight. Rectus is a straight muscle. And in this particular case, straight superior, inferior. And abdominis is anterior trunk, abdominal muscle, straight up and down. And you can't tell origin and insertion of this muscle by the name. So this is, you're going to have to just memorize this. The origin is the pubis. Where do you find the pubis? Yeah, it's part of the os coxae, right? Is it anterior or posterior? It's anterior, right? It's the most anterior bone of the os coxae, and it's also superior, all right? And the insertion is the xiphoid process, all right? So that's right here, right? That's just the inferior margin of your sternum. And when that rectus abdominis contracts, what's going to move? Is it the xiphoid process or the pubic bone? It's the xiphoid process, all right? It's going to be pulled down to the pubic bone. So what do you call that motion? That's a crunch. Really important muscle for when you're doing sit-ups. If you do sit-ups correctly, it's going to exercise that particular muscle. If you do it incorrectly, we'll talk about that muscle too in a little bit. It's actually a lot stronger. Use it most of the time. All right, rectus abdominis, all right, is going to cause flexion. So where's the insertion? What bone is the insertion? Is it the pubis or is it the xiphoid process, the insertion? Because what bone moves? Is it the sternum that's moving or the pubic bone that's moving? It's the sternum that's moving. So the insertion is the xiphoid process. The origin is the pubic bone. I might make a point about that after we compare and contrast it with the biceps. So let me see if I can find really quick the rectus abdominis. Muscles that work on the abdomen. Here we go. I'm just impatient. Rectus abdominis. Look at all those muscles that we can get rid of. We're going to talk about some of these. All right, so the origin is the pubic bone. The insertion is a xiphoid process. So let's get rid of some of these other muscles. All right, so here you can see the origin in red. Here you can see the insertion in blue. And when we say flex, thank you. Oh, look, the animation can do it better than me. Okay, maybe better than you guys too. Okay, all right, so that's flexion. Okay, now, in this particular case, the origin, how would you describe the origin compared to the insertion? You could say, well, red and blue, this is true, but in anatomical language. Yeah, the origin is inferior compared to the insertion. All right, so most of the trunk muscles, the insertion is going to be superior to the origin, and that's going to be a lot different compared to the appendicular muscles that we're going to look at now. Most of the appendicular muscles, you have the origin superior and the insertion inferior. Okay, so that's just maybe another way that you could visualize these different muscles, so that you don't have to memorize quite so much. All right, so in terms of the upper limbs, I like to pick on the biceps brachii and triceps brachii. Why do you think I like to pick on them? Yeah, because they're antagonistic to each other, right? I think that's a really important concept. And again, that alleviates the necessity of having to memorize a lot of stuff. Maybe you could just get an understanding of how muscles work, and then you don't have to memorize quite so much. All right, so biceps brachii, What body compartment is that in? Arm. What part of the arm? Anterior arm. And all of these muscles here are going to be flexors, right, of the forearm or across the elbow. And the biceps is a little bit of a complicated muscle because notice, how many origins does it have? It's got two, hence the name biceps brachii. All right, there's a long part of the muscle and a short part of the muscle, and the origins are a little bit different. There's only one insertion, and that is the radial tuberosity. Where do you find that radial tuberosity? And it's on the, yeah, it's on the radius. Okay, so it goes across the elbow. Okay, so the short head goes to the coracoid I think I have that wrong. Okay. Oh, no, I do have it right. I do have it. Never mind. The short head is the coracoid process. On what bone has a coracoid process? The scapula. The long head, all right, originates the supraglenoid tubercle. What can you tell me about this glenoid thing right here? What is that referring to? The glenoid cavity or the glenoid fossa, right? Supraglenoid tubercle means that there's a little rough area that's raised right above the glenoid fossa, right on the superior margin of the glenoid cavity or glenoid fossa. That's the long head. All right. So there's a tendon that actually goes between the tubercles on the humerus, and that tendon then goes all the way through the joint capsule before it inserts into the supraglenoid tubercle. So let me see if I can find some really nice pictures of this thing. I'm sure I can. Oops. This is what I want right here. All right, so biceps brachii. Okay, so here's the biceps brachii, and here is the short head that goes to the coracoid process. Here is the long head that goes right in that groove that you had to learn, right, in the practicum between the greater and lesser tubercles of the humerus. We call that the intertubercular groove, and it goes over the head of the humerus, and finally it inserts way back over here, right, on that supraglenoid tubercle. And then the insertion is in the radial tuberosity. And of course, when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the radial tuberosity up toward the head of the humerus right here. Okay, there's another motion that is allowed, or that's produced by the biceps. All right, because not only does the biceps brachii go across the elbow, but it also goes across the shoulder joint, okay? Because it doesn't insert into these tubercles right here, it inserts into the scapula. So the biceps brachii has two actions. It can flex the forearm, okay? And when it contracts, it's going to pull, right, the radius up toward the scapula. What do we call that motion? That's a really strange one. Because it's either going to be flexion or extension, but you can't really see what angle is increasing or decreasing right here unless you do a similar kind of motion with your leg, right? So across the hip. So think about the shoulder and think about the hip as being comparable kinds of organs, or the joints. Okay, so at the hip, what kind of motion is that? That you're decreasing the angle, and then extension, right? Flexion and extension. Do the same motion with the shoulder. This is flexion, and this is extension. So the biceps brachii not only flexes the elbow, but it also does what? Flexes at the shoulder. So the biceps brachii has those two modes of action. All right, what about Get Body Smart? Do you think it's smart enough to know? I don't know. Let's go see. Muscles that act on... Well, here are a bunch of other abdominal muscles that you want to work with. I don't know if we're going to have time to look at all those. So let's find muscles that act on the shoulder, muscles that act on the forearm. I don't know where it's going to be. It's going to be in one of these. Maybe here. Where do you think that biceps is going to be? We might have to look at all of these. Biceps brachii. That was in muscles that act on the anterior arm. All right, I don't know if I would put it there, but here it is. Load. And let's get rid of all these other superficial muscles so that we can see the origin and insertion really nice, right? So here's the coracoid process. What's that the origin of? The short head. Here's the supraglenoid tubercle. That's the origin of the long head. And then here's the insertion, the radial tuberosity. Okay, and I'm not going to ask you about this aponeurosis. Oh, but what is an aponeurosis? It's a broad, flat, tendinous sheath that's used for grabbing onto one end of the muscle. All right, and the biceps brachii flexes the arm. Ah, indeed. They've got that one. All right, but what about flex at the elbow? We don't have flex at the elbow here. But that one, yeah, I don't know what else to click on. Well, that's pretty good. Well, the program's not infallible. It doesn't show you flexing of the forearm. But we can use this as an important moment for teaching something. Okay? You got a number of muscles in the anterior arm that are all going to flex the elbow, including the biceps brachii, but there's another one in there. Does anybody know what another one is that's underneath the biceps? We didn't talk about it yet, I don't think. It's called we did when we talked about classifications of muscles. It's the brachialis, right? And the brachialis also causes flexion. What do we call two muscles that perform the same kind of motion? They're synergists, right? And usually one muscle is a lot stronger than the other. And what I want, and your book does kind of a bad job with this, maybe not bad, but doesn't think the way that I do and the way that Get Body Smart thinks. Okay, so here we have Get Body Smart, and do they mention flexion of the forearm, which maybe you think is mostly due to the biceps? They mention it, but they don't have the animation here. They kind of slide over it. All right. What do we call a muscle who's the strongest of a group that performs one kind of motion? The prime mover. You guys are studying your notes. That's really good. All right. So the prime mover for forearm flexion, okay, could be the biceps or could be the deep muscle, the brachialis. All right, and guess what I want you to know? Which one of those two is it? It's really the brachialis, because the brachialis only works across the elbow. It doesn't work across the shoulder like the biceps does. Okay, so indeed, for forearm flexion, it's both the biceps and the brachialis, but it's really the brachialis that's the stronger of the two. All right, so here you can see the two origins, that insertion. Let's see if we got brachialis anywhere. Because it doesn't work across the shoulder. Let's go back to muscles that act on the forearm. Brachialis. Oh, biceps is in there. Oh, maybe they have the other action for the biceps. All right, so here's the brachialis. Let's get rid of some of these other muscles. All right, here is the origin, the anterior distal shaft of the humerus. The insertion is the coronoid process on the ulna. All right, and it's going to flex, there we go, flex the forearm. All right, and look how big that muscle is right here. All right, so that's the brachialis. Let's go back. Maybe they have flexion. Oh, this is where they put it. Oh, that's pretty interesting. All right, so they do have flexion of the forearm for the biceps. You just have to go to another section. Okay, that's really nice. All right, and again, you can see the origins and insertions. All right, so that's the biceps. But since we want to consider antagonism, what's going to be the antagonistic muscle? That's the triceps brachii. And why do they say triceps? Because there's three origins, right? There's three important muscle bellies, one insertion. And it's going to be antagonistic to the biceps. And what other muscle is the triceps antagonistic to? The brachialis, right? All right, so the long head is the infraglenoid tubercle. What's that going to, where are you going to find that? Yeah, it's going to be the inferior margin of the glenoid fossa. The lateral head is the proximal posterior shaft of the humerus. The medial head is the distal posterior shaft of the humerus. All right. Now, does the triceps, well, the triceps, yeah, the long head works across the shoulder. Okay, and since it's working across the shoulder, what kind of action is that long head? What kind of action can the long head produce? Extension, just like the long head of the biceps can produce flexion. Okay, but these lateral heads don't work across the shoulder. Those are purely for extension of the forearm. Okay. All right, and the insertion, olecranon process. Is that easy to visualize, olecranon process? Go ahead, you can point to that. Point to that. That's what you bang on stuff all the time by accident, right? That point in your elbow. All right, so for Get Body Smart, what about the triceps brachii? We have to do each of these individually? Maybe. Okay, so here is the long head going to the infraglenoid tubercle and then inserting into the olecranon process. Let me see if we can get some of these other heads. Well, we can see, well, you would have to do those individually. And then there is the action. Okay, so this is a nice quiz for you, this Get Body Smart, along with those other exercises that are in Blackboard. Okay. All right, so biceps brachii, triceps brachii. Now, there is another biceps in your body, which maybe I'll show you next time. Okay, and that biceps is in your leg. So that biceps, we don't call the biceps brachii, we're going to call that the biceps, what's that region of your body in your thigh? That's a femoral region, so that would be called the biceps femoris. Okay? And sometimes I like to use that as a trick, okay? Because I might ask you, name a couple muscles that are synergistic to each other. They're synergistic to the biceps brachii. What would you say would be synergistic to the biceps brachii? Brachialis. How about biceps femoris?
No.
Why not? Sounds good. Why not biceps femoris? Synergist to the biceps brachii. Because they're not related to each other, right? Because the biceps brachii is in the arm, biceps femoris is in the... Where's the biceps femoris at? What do we call that part of your body? That's your thigh. That's your thigh, okay? Biceps femoris is in the thigh, okay? Right, so what about lower limbs? We talked about this action before, the gastrocnemius. This is the prime mover for plantar flexion. Pretend your hand is a foot. Plantar flexion is what?
Pointing
your toes down. Elevating your whole body. What kind of muscle is that? Yeah, really strong, right? Really big and strong. All right, so the origin is there are like two heads to the gastrocnemius, though we don't really speak about it that way. We really speak about the gastrocnemius with one origin. All right, but they are the medial and lateral condyles of the femur, which is what? The bone in your thigh. And then the insertion is the calcaneus. It's the most posterior part of the calcaneus via a big, strong tendon called the calcaneal tendon. Okay, so this is another interesting kind of muscle because you see that it works across the ankle, but what other joint does it work across? Look at this origin right here. The origin is the, is it the tibia or fibula? I don't see tibia or fibula there. What do we see? The femur. So here is a muscle that works across the ankle, but it also works across the knee. Okay, so we've looked at a couple muscles like this already, like the triceps and biceps. So it works across the knee, but it also the main motion is across the ankle for plantar flexion. But since it's working across the knee, and it's in the posterior part of your lower appendage, posterior across the knee is going to produce what kind of motion? Extension or flexion? So it's a weak flexor of the leg as well. All right, so let me see if I can find a nice picture of the gastrocnemius. Oh, that's anterior. We want to look posteriorly. Okay, so here is the gastrocnemius. The origins are the medial and lateral condyles of the femur, which is way up here. And then the insertion is the calcaneus. So both the medial and lateral heads of the gastrocnemius insert into this long tendon that we call the calcaneal tendon. But it also has another name. It's called the Achilles tendon. Okay, and that's named after that mythological figure Achilles. Right, and supposedly he was protected by, I don't know what god he was protected by. He was protected by one of the Greek gods during a battle in Greece or something, because his god picked him up by the heel. Who was that? You think it was Zeus? Zeus picked him up by the heel and dipped him in some protecting solution. So his whole body was protected except where Zeus didn't dip him in the, yeah. And so that is what's called the Achilles heel right here. And unfortunately, Achilles got shot by an arrow right here, and that was the only place where he wasn't protected, and he died as a result of that, right? Did he succumb to that injury, or he couldn't run away and then get trampled? I'm not sure what happened to him. All right, so Achilles tendon or calcaneal tendon, and can you imagine the amount of tension that's produced on this Achilles tendon right here? Would you say a little bit or a lot? A lot, right? When that gastrocnemius contracts with the synergistic muscles, it holds up the whole weight of your body on this very narrow cord right here, so that Achilles tendon can rupture fairly easily, and it does in people. Okay, if they're playing things like soccer and things like that. And usually it's quite dramatic. People around you can actually hear that calcaneal tendon separate. And people that heard, I've never heard it say it sounds like a gunshot or a shotgun blast. It can be so loud. And so usually people stop playing soccer and look around the field looking for somebody that has a gun, but nobody has a gun, and they find somebody just lying on the ground, kind of in agony because that calcaneal tendon has separated. Okay. So used to be maybe 15 years ago, surgically that tendon then would be reattached to the calcaneus. But you know what the preferred surgery is, depending on the exact nature of the injury? They just like to cast it now and let the tendon reinsert by itself. That's kind of interesting that it actually finds its way back down there. Okay. All right. So we got the gastrocnemius and another muscle in the posterior leg. What do you think the relationship is between the gastrocnemius and soleus? Because they're in the same body compartment. They're going to be synergists. Yeah, they're important synergists to each other. They all insert into the calcaneal tendon and then insert into the calcaneus right here. So both produce what kind of action? Yeah, they're synergists, so they all produce plantar flexion. All right, so if you want to find dorsiflexors, where should we go to find dorsiflexors? Since the gastrocnemius and soleus is in the posterior leg, we want to look into the anterior leg. And indeed, for instance, the anterior tibialis, you can see, is going to cause dorsiflexion, okay, and extension of the digits right here. Let me see about... gastrocnemius. Let's look at some nice origins and insertions right here. All right, so in shadow form, we have the gastrocnemius. Here are the origins, right? The epicondyles of the femur. So it goes all the way across the knee. That's what's going to produce flexion of the leg. And the insertion is the calcaneus, and that's going to produce plantar flexion. Plantar flexes the foot. All right, so I hope you guys use this a lot, this program. This is a really nice program. All right. So where's that sign-in sheet at? Is it around in the back? Okay, you're going to bring it down front? Okay. All right, so that's it for today. We've gone over some of those major muscles. Next time we're going to look at some more muscles of the lower appendages.